Good evening. Cuomo says no to the Trump's threats to send federal agents to the city. Ocasio-Cortez stands up to a bully, and the economy stumbles again. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Thursday, July 23rd, 2020. President Trump announced Thursday that he's canceling the Republican National Convention events that were scheduled to take place next month in Jacksonville, Florida, citing the rising numbers of COVID-19 in the state. Trump said the timing for the event is not right. It's just not right. During a press briefing at the White House, to have big conventions, it's just not the right time, he added. Last month, the Republican National Committee chose Jacksonville to host major portions of the convention after largely abandoning the city of Charlotte, North Carolina, over disagreements on coronavirus-related crowd restrictions. The president and Republican officials were angered after Governor Roy Cooper of North Carolina, a Democrat, said that because of the pandemic, he wasn't prepared to guarantee the RNC, that's the Republican National Convention, a full-fledged convention with an arena packed full of party officials, delegates, and activists, as desired by Trump. While the Jacksonville portion of the convention has been canceled, Trump said the delegates will still meet in North Carolina and that he will give an address when he accepts the nomination. And Portland, Oregon Mayor Ted Wheeler was tear-gassed by federal officers along with a large crowd of protesters late Wednesday night after he tried for hours to calm down angry activists demanding police reform from City Hall. Wheeler was caught in the chaos that began around 11:15 p.m. Reportedly, some protesters threw flaming bags of garbage over a fence protecting the local federal courthouse. Trump has sent federal agents to the small liberal city, prompting complaints of unidentified men grabbing peaceful protesters off the street.
Who is this? Who are you?
You follow us, you will get shot. You understand me?
What is happening?
Where's she going?
Where's she going?
Where's she going?
Where are you taking her? Where are you? You have to tell us where you're taking her. Where are you going? Where are you going? Help us! Help us! Who is this?
And your eyes, your ears did not deceive you. That was a federal agent threatening to shoot anyone who followed the vehicle that they swept the person off the street from and into. Trump also announced he's sending federal agents to Albuquerque, and Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has warned she'll call for prosecutions if they commit any civil rights abuses in New Mexico. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio said he would take the federal administration to court if Trump said law enforcement to this city, while Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot said she's open to working with federal law enforcement but wary about potential federal abuse of power. Speaking today, Governor Andrew Cuomo said he spoke to Trump about any plans to send the agents to New York.
The president has sent troops to Portland, Oregon. The president just sent troops to Chicago, Illinois. The president is talking about sending troops to other cities. The president suggested he would send troops to New York City, troops, federal agents, etc. I spoke to the president about it. I don't believe there's any justification to send federal troops or federal agents to New York City, and I told him that. There is no federal property that is endangered that could justify the federal government having to send agents. The constitutional law is clear on this. The nation does not have a federal police force to deploy in their discretion. Policing is left up to the states. The president and I had a good conversation. He said he would not be sending troops into New York City. He did not say, period, ad infinitum, but he said that we would talk before he did anything. And New York was not included yesterday in the announcement that he was sending troops into Chicago. If the president were to do that, of course, we would sue. I believe it's blatantly unconstitutional. But a lawsuit in this case would also not be highly effective as a short-term measure. There are numerous lawsuits. Portland, Oregon has sued the federal government. Mayors have sued the federal government. The lawsuits take time. And for that lawsuit to work its way through the courts, you'd be talking about a significant amount of time. I think if they sent in federal agents, I think it would be inflammatory. I think it would be pouring gasoline on a fire. and that's the last thing we need in New York City. So the president said he heard me. He said he wouldn't do it. He said that we would talk if anything changed. It was a good conversation, and I'm going to hold the president to his word, and I have no reason to believe anything other than that. And the president said if there was a change, we would have a conversation first. But I'll stay on top of this and monitor it, and we'll see where we go from here. But so far, the president has not said anything different than we had on the conversation. In the meantime, New York City must focus on quality of life and essential services. The rationale used in Chicago was crime. We have had crime increase in New York City. We have to get on that. The homelessness, the graffiti. So we have work to do here in New York. Long term for New York City, we will need a significant effort to restart the economy.
Governor Andrew Cuomo, professor emerita at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law and the former president of the National Lawyers Guild, is Marjorie Cohen. She says while courts could be a slow remedy for a president she claims is out of control, there are ways for a judge to intervene in a situation quickly.
When you go into court to ask for a temporary restraining order, that's kind of a temporary injunction, you're saying there's an emergency and people's First Amendment rights are going to be violated, because if they think that they're going to be the subject of violence and they're going to be roughed up the way that people have in Portland, then that is likely to deter them from exercising their First Amendment rights. They will be chilled from exercising their First Amendment rights. Yes, things take time ultimately, but you can go in for an injunction and to get a ruling pretty quickly.
Isn't there separation of powers? It seems like what we used to take for granted is separation of powers, and that the president of the United States was limited by what Congress did or what the courts did. It seems to be all thrown to the wind. I mean, is that a law? Do they have to follow separation of powers?
Trump can try to do whatever he wants. That doesn't mean that he can violate separation of powers, although he does it all the time, and it's up to the courts to say no. The House of Representatives 2 days ago approved an amendment to the Insurrection Act that would require the president to consult with Congress before deploying federal troops to U.S. cities. And if this amendment were to pass, and that's unlikely given the Republican-controlled Senate, but before deploying federal troops, the administration would have to certify to Congress with demonstrable evidence that local authorities are unable or unwilling to quell the violence, and it would forbid federal troops from conducting searches, seizures, arrests, or other similar activity unless otherwise expressly authorized by law. And the Insurrection Act, although Trump has not invoked it, he likely will when he is defending some of these lawsuits. There have been several filed in this matter. There are different ways to trigger the Insurrection Act to deploy the military on U.S. soil. The most common is when the governor of a state asks the president for assistance to put down an insurrection against the government. And in 1992, Governor Pete Wilson in California asked President George H.W. Bush to send federal troops to suppress the uprising after the officers who beat Rodney King were acquitted in their state trial. But most of the time, it's used to enforce civil rights laws. It was enacted after the Civil War to ensure that there is a section of it enacted after the Civil War to ensure that Southern states enforce the federal rights of black people. Kennedy used it to send federal troops to Alabama and Mississippi to enforce civil rights laws. Lyndon Johnson used it in 1965 to protect civil rights demonstrators from police violence during the march from Selma to Montgomery. But there is a provision in the Insurrection Act that says that the president can deploy the military on U.S. soil. And these are not military, by the way. These are his army that he's cobbled together from more loyal organizations. The military people could disobey unlawful orders, but it's a subjective thing where the president can decide congressional zone. And that's what this amendment in the House of Representatives is aimed to do, to curtail the president's unbridled discretion to send these goons anywhere he wants.
He's finding these powers that are not necessarily even written, but because of his position as president, he knows a lot of things and has a lot of handles on different levers of putting together a private army.
Trump is consulting none other than the infamous torture lawyer John Yoo, who recently wrote an article in the National Review saying basically the president can violate the law and it's going to take a couple of years to get through the courts anyway. And you can bet that Yoo is telling Trump that, yeah, go ahead and do it. You won't even have to worry because it'll take so long to get through the courts. And that's really alarming, especially in light of the election looming. And he refused to say on Fox News that he would abide by the results of the election. He says, I have to see first. What's going to keep him from declaring martial law and bringing out his federal goons and staying in the White House? That's a real fear. I think a valid fear. Meanwhile, he's orchestrating this campaign of voter suppression, or his minions are. But he's very freaked out about his poll numbers, and he'll do literally anything to hang on to power.
Marjorie Cohen is professor emerita at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law and the former president of the National Lawyers Guild. And Berkeley law professor John Yoo, the lawyer who helped craft former President George W. Bush's legal justification for torture, has confirmed he's working with Trump's administration to find ways to skirt the law to impose his own policies. But when Yoo was asked about Trump's recent deployment of federal agents to Portland, he demurred, saying it has to be really reasonably related to protecting federal buildings. If it's just graffiti, that's not enough. It really depends on what the facts are. Yoo is best known for his work as a Department of Justice attorney in the early 2000s, drafting Bush's legal justification for torturing detainees after the September 11th, 2001 attacks, also known as the torture memos. And you're listening to WBAI New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's outrage over a Republican lawmaker's verbal assault broadened into an extraordinary moment on the House floor Thursday as she and other Democrats assailed a sexist culture of accepting violence and violent language against women whose adherents include President Trump.
About 2 days ago, I was walking up the steps of the Capitol when Representative Yoho suddenly turned a corner, and he was accompanied by Representative Roger Williams, and accosted me on the steps right here in front of our nation's capital. I was minding my own business, walking up the steps, and Representative Yoho put his finger in my face. He called me disgusting. He called me crazy. He called me out of my mind. And he called me dangerous. And then he took a few more steps. And after I had recognized his comments as rude, he walked away and said, "I'm rude. You're calling me rude." I took a few steps ahead and I walked inside and cast my vote, because my constituents send me here each and every day to fight for them and to make sure that they are able to keep a roof over their head, that they're able to feed their families, and that they're able to carry their lives with dignity. I walked back out, and there were reporters in the front of the Capitol, and in front of reporters, Representative Yoho called me, and I quote, "a fucking bitch." These are the words that Representative Yoho levied against a congresswoman, the congresswoman that not only represents New York's 14th congressional district, but every congresswoman and every woman in this country, because all of us have had to deal with this in some form, some way, some shape, at some point in our lives. And I want to be clear that Representative Yoho's comments were not deeply hurtful or piercing to me, because I have worked a working class job. I have waited tables in restaurants. I have ridden the subway. I have walked the streets in New York City. And this kind of language is not new. I have encountered words uttered by Mr. Yoho and men uttering the same words as Mr. Yoho while I was being harassed in restaurants. I have tossed men out of bars that have used language like Mr. Yoho's. And I have encountered this type of harassment riding the subway in New York City. This is not new. And that is the problem.
Representative Ocasio-Cortez, she was supported by California Representative Barbara Lee.
Congresswoman, we are here today with you. We are here supporting your right to speak out, to represent your constituents, and to be who you are, a brave and bold member of Congress, which we know you to be. Now, the gentleman from Florida, yes, he must apologize to you, Congresswoman. He must apologize, though, to all of the little girls who aspire to be who they are, to be who they are without being called disgusting names and barriers to keep their voices silent. I close with reading you just one verse of our beloved Dr. Maya Angelou's poem, Still I Rise. I'm reminded of you today. She said, "You may shoot me with your words. You may cut me with your eyes. You may kill me with your hatefulness, but still, like air, I'll rise." So yes, Congresswoman, you have risen once again.
Representative Barbara Lee. Trump was captured in a 2005 tape boasting about physically abusing women. He has disparaged House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, calling her crazy. In an apparent reference to the tape about degrading a woman, Ocasio-Cortez said men accost women with a sense of impunity every day, including when individuals who hold the highest office in the land admit to hurting women. And the United States Justice Department's internal watchdog launched probes on Thursday into the use of force by federal agents in Portland, Oregon, and Washington, D.C., during recent protests against police violence. Inspector General Michael Horowitz said his office would launch an investigation into allegations that federal agents use excessive force against peaceful protesters in Portland, and a separate review into actions taken against protesters both in Portland and Lafayette Square near the White House on June 1st. Meanwhile, the House Intelligence Committee debated a bill sponsored by Adam Schiff entitled Abuse of the Pardon Prevention Act. It would prevent Trump from pardoning himself. Committee Chair Jerry Nadler.
The issue of a self-pardon is unique and is fundamentally at odds with all notions of justice. Although the legal community is virtually unanimous in its opinion that the president may not issue a self-pardon, the one person with the power to do so has not gotten the message. It is therefore incumbent on us to make this point explicit. By speaking firmly on this issue, we may deter this or any future president from attempting such an unprecedented move. And should this issue ever reach the courts, judges and justices will have the benefit of our views as well. As with other aspects of this bill, it is unfortunate that it has become necessary for us to make explicit these basic principles of fairness and common sense. Any president who commits a crime and then pardons himself for it would display open hostility to our nation's system of laws. Such blatant corruption and self-dealing cannot be tolerated in a constitutional democracy.
Committee Chair Jerry Nadler. But Texas Republican and Tea Party advocate Louis Gohmert said Democrats are making a big boulder out of a little stone.
You talk about a little guy named Roger Stone, who would never have been prosecuted if he were not a friend, not a close friend, but a friend of the president. Now, but what you have in the preceding administration is people literally getting away with murder and not being held to account, not being called in here and held to account even by Congress for outrageous things that they have done. And so, which is worse, giving yourself a pardon or making sure as president you or anybody in your administration is not prosecuted so that you can say after your president, well, we never had any scandals in my administration. Well, they were covered up pretty well, but hopefully some of that's about to change.
Texas Republican and Tea Party advocate Louis Gohmert. Roger Stone, a close aide of Trump, was convicted of 7 felonies for lying to Congress about his connections with an attempt to gain access to computer files stolen from the Democratic Party in 2016. Stone had his sentence commuted by Trump the day before he was due to start his sentence in federal prison. Stone's occasional frenemy was comedian Randy Cretico, who fought a subpoena before the House and grand jury. Cretico's lawyer was Martin Stoller. He says Trump's commutation of Stone's sentence was a slap to the rule of law.
Personally, I'm f***ing outraged. You know, it's a total misuse of the pardon power, and it's just consistent with the way that he and Barr have misused the Justice Department as a, to assist in the cover-up. The other response is that what I find interesting is that Randy had written a letter to the judge about sentencing, saying that because of his experiences with incarceration in his own life and his family life and all of his work that he's done with the mothers and the, of the people incarcerated under the Rockefeller drug laws, that he's come to believe that the incarceration is not appropriate. So he didn't want the judge to send Roger to jail. Here we go. Randy and Trump come out with the same result. Slightly different process, I would say.
Well, what is Roger Stone's thing? What is he? Is he an agent of Trump who was rewarded, or is he just a guy?
Yes, absolutely. He's a crony. He could have burned Trump terribly badly. Mueller couldn't get a deposition from Trump, so they gave him a bunch of interrogatories to answer under oath. And there were a whole series of interrogatories where he denied having interactions with Stone or didn't remember them, things that were obvious that other people had overheard him having the phone calls. So all Stone had to do was open his mouth up and say Trump lied. Of course I had interactions with him. I was giving him information or trying to. He kept his mouth shut and kept Trump from being indicted for perjury or after he'd left office. And now he gets rewarded for being part of Trump's cover-up.
It sounds like an organized crime operation.
Yes, it certainly does, doesn't it?
Did he ever apologize to Randy for trying to shoot his dog and all that, threatening to shoot his dog?
I don't believe so. I don't believe so.
Are they friends again, or are they enemies for life now?
No, they're certainly not. They're certainly not friends. I mean, look, they were never friends before. They were acquaintances. Randy used him on his radio show. He and Randy, you know, were political acquaintances back when they got started because they were both trying to fight the Rockefeller drug laws and get marijuana legalized. Right. Oh, that's where they met, around the legalization of marijuana. They kept being acquaintances over the years, off and on. You know, Randy would get threatened by Stone. Stone would go off into some crazy rant and tell all of his friends that Randy was dead. And Randy woke up one morning getting texts from all over the world saying, God, you're dead, Randy? How do I know that?
What a great friend to have there with Roger Stone.
It's wonderful. So that friend is not the word I would use.
Right. Frenemy. That's what we called it, a frenemy.
And that's Attorney Martin Stoller. And the GOP is having its own internal political problems as Trump's poll numbers continue to slide. President Donald Trump on Thursday joined Republicans who are publicly criticizing GOP Representative Liz Cheney, who has broken with the president in regard to American military engagement overseas and support of Dr. Anthony Fauci during the coronavirus pandemic. That prompted House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy to offer a defense of the former Bush vice president's daughter.
In our party, we're allowed to have differences of opinion, especially when it comes to foreign policy. Liz Cheney and the president agree 98% of the time. And there's nothing wrong with having a discussion about different ways of going forward. But I think the best part is that we get we're united and we don't air these in public.
And that's House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. The stock market fell sharply on Thursday after jobless claims came in worse than expected, rising for the first time in nearly 4 months amid the recent surge in coronavirus cases across the country. And there's a growing sense that the recovery is losing steam as the infections surge in states across the West and South. Columbia Law Professor Michael Gratz is author of The Wolf at the Door, The Menace of Economic Insecurity. He says the United States is at an economic crossroads.
40% of American families could not pay off a $400 emergency with cash or with a credit card they could pay off by the end of the month. And now many, many American families are facing emergencies far larger than $400. So we had a precarious workforce even when unemployment was low. When the book was published, and now unemployment is higher than it's been in 90 years, and our workforce is far more precarious, and our families are also in very dire straits.
The governor of New York State was saying just that. They're having problems getting people to come back to New York City because the companies discovered they didn't really need people coming into offices anymore.
The workplace is going to change if people are able to work effectively from home. But, of course, in this country, the weakness is in the child care system and in universal pre-K, which has been pretty good in New York City, but not so much everywhere else. Parents of young children really can't always work effectively from home.
What's our way out of this?
Creating jobs, infrastructure, including broadband technology in both cities and rural areas, making work pay more for those who have jobs through increases and expansions in the earned income tax credit. And this is very important now, fixing the system of unemployment insurance, which is almost a century old and never worked properly, and moving to a more modern system of re-employment insurance that would both cover workers when they're unemployed in a way that the current system does not, helping move people to re-employment when the old jobs disappear.
What would that look like?
It would look a lot like a program that was actually enacted in the Kennedy administration, which was designed, it was called Trade Adjustment Assistance, and was designed to help workers who lost their jobs due to trade move into new employment through retraining and money to help them relocate if they needed to in order to move into a new job.
Are we all going to wind up being trained for the only job that's left?
It was the case that during the Industrial Revolution, people said technology was going to eliminate jobs. It didn't, after all, eliminate jobs. What it did was it really changed the kinds of jobs that people were seeing. And the idea here is that we not simply look to low-wage service jobs, but that through education and technical assistance, people can actually find themselves with well-paying jobs.
Michael Gratz is author of The Wolf at the Door, The Menace of Economic Insecurity. He's a professor at Columbia University. And that's some of the news for Thursday, July 23rd, 2020. The news is produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News from New York, I'm Paul D'Arienzo. Thanks for listening.